Welcome to Speakable. This is a space for showcasing conversations about all the interesting and important things the faculty and students are doing at FCAT.
What we hope is to have engaged and informed conversations focused on current issues of the day. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the second installment of our series about AI, ChatGPT, classroom instruction, the future of education, all of those small, big topics. Today I had the chance to sit down with Genesia Pedri, a lecturer in the School of Communication, and Leanne Johnson, a lecturer in the publishing program, and chat with them and ask them about their long experience of many transformations of student work in the classroom and how they have incorporated ChatGPT in their teaching.
I am Leanne Johnson. I am a senior lecturer in the publishing program, and my background is cultural publishing as well as writing and art making, and I teach in both the graduate and undergraduate program here.
I'm Genesia Pedri, and I teach in the School of Communication at SFU. I teach a range of undergraduate courses, including a couple of writing intensive courses. I also have a background in writing and was a contributing editor at Geist magazine for over a decade. So a range of teaching and writing related experience.
So thank you both very much for coming and chatting with me about the state of the classroom in 2024, 2025, the state of learning, the state of writing. I've also been teaching as an instructor for just over 15 years, but I've been in the classroom longer than that, and I know I have observed a whole bunch of differences and changes. And actually, what's funny about ChatGPT is I came back from sabbatical and people were saying ChatGPT, and I was like, what is that? What now? What happened? I was away for 1 year and like GTP, BGT, what? And it feels like it was such a big change at breakneck speed, and suddenly, you know, I had to catch up to what it was, how it was going to be impacting education. Then immediately we started having conversations, included conversations supported by C, about here's how to not here's how to combat ChatGPT use, but here's how to work with it if you can, please. That's kind of how I saw all of that communication. So I'm curious if each of you can say a little bit about, you know, your initial encounter with ChatGPT in the classroom. And then I'm hoping that the conversation will kind of get into, and, you know, how have things evolved? And what do we think about where things are going?
Sure. Yeah, it's the same. I mean, all of a sudden it feels like that's all. Every conference I went to, everybody was talking about generative AI, probably even before 2023. And I started to think about it in the classroom. And like everyone, the first thing was thinking about what kind of generative AI policy am I going to have for my students in the classroom. And last year, I created my first AI class guidelines, where I didn't lock it down. I allowed students to use it if they wanted to, but they had to indicate that they were using it in an assignment, and they had to include the prompts that they were using, and first prompt, second prompt, third prompt, that kind of thing. And I think ultimately no one took me up on it, although I did notice that when I was experimenting on my assignments and asking ChatGPT to create them, then I noticed there was a little overlap with a couple of students. So I assumed that they were using those tools, but weren't really reporting the use of them. And I realized that partly it was my own fault for making it overly complicated and sort of went back to the drawing board on how to use it in the classroom and created a new policy for this year and new ways of incorporating it into the classroom.
I think, Leanne, I had a similar sort of experience at first. I actually can remember my first sort of reckoning with ChatGPT in the classroom. I remember hearing about ChatGPT, and I was giving students a take-home exam in one of my courses. And so I went and I created a ChatGPT account, and I put one of my take-home exam questions into the prompt. And it gave me an answer that, if I'm honest, I would have passed. I would have passed. And I thought, uh-oh. All right, time to, time to get serious about thinking about assessment and how to sort of, you know, measure outcomes of learning in a classroom. So that was a real reckoning. And then, so I also created an early draft of a course policy on AI use so that students were aware from the get-go that using AI to produce their work in part or in whole without citing it is a form of plagiarism. Anytime students use or represent ideas or words that are not their own as if they are their own, that is a form of plagiarism. And then I got really serious about thinking around ChatGPT. How could it be incorporated, or how can we create assignments that are difficult to rely on AI to produce in whole for students? I also tried to think of ways to incorporate lessons on the ethical use of AI in our discussions around writing in classrooms. So I kind of tried to address it from both, like, from a course policy perspective, assignment design, and also in the context of teaching. And that has really evolved over the last sort of year. Leanne, I also learned, you know, trial and error, you know, how do you, I don't think it's intuitive to students how to actually use AI. And they're new to being given instructions on how to acknowledge its use. APA now has guidelines on how to cite AI. So working those into assignment guidelines and really scaffolding students in their use of AI has been more productive.
Wow. I'm curious, there's sort of how we want to think of ChatGPT or AI, and then there's how students are using it and why. So how do you see students using it, and why do you think they're using it in that way? Part of why I asked that question is because I've heard from other instructors, you know, incorporating these sort of prompt writing, having students do reflections on their use of ChatGPT, and what they've gotten instead is students simply using ChatGPT without any reflection or any credit or sourcing. And so, you know, the question is sort of like, are the instructions being lost in translation, or is it just students who are using it as a shortcut to doing the actual work? And so, like, they're never were going to credit or cite?
Well, it's interesting. Some are using it for work. I just created a persona assignment where students were asked to create a prompt based on research that they did in their previous assignment, and to create a prompt and to generate a persona using ChatGPT with the prompt and the data they already had. And after I asked them for the assumptions they had before they created the assignment, and then what they discovered, or before they did the assignment and what they discovered after. And it was really interesting. The students themselves are quite, I think, quite critical of ChatGPT. There was like a 50-50, or of generative AI. There's about a 50-50 split of the 36 students. 18 of them had mostly approached it with a negative thinking of it in a negative sense, and 18 with a positive sense of the results. But mostly what I was interested in, some had never used it for school, or so they said in their assumptions, and I believe them. They have often used it in the workplace, which I thought was really interesting. Our students tend to come from maybe marketing backgrounds, and I think marketing is definitely one of the one of the key areas where we're seeing companies incorporating ChatGPT or other generative AI.
Yeah, so I have asked students also and given them sort of exercises in class to see how they're using ChatGPT or generative AI, large language models, in order to assist them in their writing. And there is quite a split. I think a lot of students are really reluctant to use these models because they're not confident in how to use them ethically. And so I do hear from a lot of students that they don't use them. But when I give students exercises in class, I do kind of interesting experiment. I give students an essay prompt. We talk about the writing process, and then I give them the task of starting the essay based on the prompt in class in pairs using ChatGPT. And I kind of encourage them to start as if you would any assignment, and the amount of confusion is really telling, I think really interesting. And I have to really walk it back and allow them to reflect on, okay, well, what would you do if you didn't have ChatGPT? And then they go, oh, okay, well, I would research, I would ask these kinds of questions. But in the presence of like the involvement of ChatGPT in the assignment, automatically they go, wait, so you want me to get ChatGPT to write the assignment or to do the assignment? So it is really interesting. I think that I'm learning that these large language models can be used at different stages of the writing process to help us. How we don't want students using them is to circumvent learning and to circumvent the work of doing idea generation, for instance. So students will often use ChatGPT to generate an outline for whatever it is they're writing. And I try to have discussions with students about the limitations of doing that. Not only is it, ethically questionable in the context of academic integrity, but also if your task is to ask a research question and then to find the answer to that question, if ChatGPT generates the outline for you and you just go and look for information to populate the outline, you haven't really done the work of answering that question. You've sort of determined an answer to the question before going on the search to find that answer. But I think that when students are using ChatGPT to avoid doing the work, they do so for the same reasons that students plagiarize in other contexts, like stress or a heavy course load, or they have poor time management. All of these things factor into why students will plagiarize or offload their work in whatever capacity, whether they're copying and pasting from Wikipedia or from ChatGPT. So, I mean, that's, I think, another really interesting aspect of why students turn to ChatGPT. And I'm hopeful that in talking about the writing process and helping students to think about how can we use these things ethically and effectively, what are their strengths and limitations, we can work them into the writing process without circumventing that work of idea generation. I mean, that's the hard part. I think that's why it's so tempting to just go, create an outline for me, because that's the really hard part. Generating ideas is hard. ChatGPT will generate the ideas for you, and then you just have to fill in the blanks. So I think that's like part of the allure.
Leah, my next question was going to be, to bring you into the conversation. So what Genesia was saying made me really think about, there's two ways of thinking about ChatGPT in terms of in the context of learning and in the classroom. And, you know, we can think about, are the assessment goals being met? I mean, if students are using ChatGPT to just answer questions and they're not learning anything, then, you know, we're not meeting the assessment criteria. I have tended more to think about it as more in the sense of, are students doing original work? Are they doing work that is their own work? Are they doing sufficiently work that is original, more in line of what Genesia was just saying in terms of generating ideas, but also generating arguments? I mean, with us, one of the bread and butter assignment is the research essay in which you make an original argument, right? And yes, sadly and unfortunately, ChatGPT can make a, you know, a C+ level original argument that's coherent on a certain topic. And so then what do we go from there? Where are we at? So I was wondering, with your field in publishing, you know, what would you consider to be kind of what you're looking to get out of students, or what you're looking pedagogically to get that is either helped or hindered by ChatGPT?
Yeah, so my course, especially with my undergraduates, is to help them learn transferable skills in areas around whatever particular stream they come in with. If it's they come from a design stream, writing stream, communications, I want them to learn transferable skills like writing for the workplace, like marketing, understanding spreadsheets and things like that. And of course, we see that so many organizations are incorporating ChatGPT or other generative AI models into the workflow. And I feel like my students need to know how to balance that ideation and also incorporating ChatGPT into their workflow. And I think by what worked for me for the persona assignment was interesting was that the students realized that they needed a good prompt in order to get good results. And the thinking goes into the prompt, and then the ChatGPT generates either, if you put in a good prompt, you get fairly good results, and you dig deeper and you get more detailed information. And the data that it has is particularly helpful for this application. And I think that's what I want students to learn, is that to be able to say that they've used this in their workflow, but also to learn how to use it properly. So it's still learning. It's just learning a new tool, like we teach them how to use InDesign. Of course, it's a much more problematic and fraught tool, I would say, but...
Well, with InDesign and with, that this is where we get, if we step outside of writing and we go into, you know, image generation, then we have this whole generative AI for image generation. And that is less of an issue that we have in communication because we rely a bit more on writing. But in publishing, I can imagine that, because some of the skills are very practical and professional.
Yeah, so image generation, we see publishers using generative AI for publishing or for image generation, cover design, things like that. Becomes more problematic as far as, maybe not so much, but definitely for copyright infringement, things like that. So publishing's in this place where it's, we're impacted by the kind of flooding of Amazon with generative AI books that and counterfeit books claiming authorship. The most famous one being the mushroom foraging book, which was generated by AI and was completely dangerous. But also authors are finding books that they didn't write being sold on Amazon, that were obviously.
Oh my God, you're blowing my mind right now. I didn't know this was happening.
Yeah, so there's definitely an issue around that, but also publishing is grappling with issues around shrinking margins. People have much more option of choices of things they want to do, and so publishers' margins shrink a little bit year over year, and so they're looking at how to optimize their workflows and how they can use this tool to be able to keep the margins from shrinking any further by being able to do more with less, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Leanne, you raised some really interesting questions, and these are things that in our communications courses, we talk with students about. So we have an entire lecture in Communication 120, for instance, about AI and the future of writing. And of course, we talk about academic integrity, but also it's an applied communications course, and we are thinking about transferable skills and how to prepare students to use these kinds of tools effectively and ethically beyond the university. So we do talk about copyright infringement. We talk about questions around bias in AI, not just in large language models, but also in image generation. So some recent studies have shown that AI image generators exhibit more racial gender stereotypes than a human being would. So being aware of the kinds of information that we're generating from these models is really important. The credibility of that information, especially as you move into careers. A BC lawyer in February was reprimanded for citing cases that ChatGPT had hallucinated. So hallucination in AI is a very well-known phenomenon. And also questions around intellectual property. So talking with friends who work in marketing and in advertising, the companies that they work for don't want employees putting intellectual property that belongs to the company into large language models like ChatGPT. So students do really need to learn how to write on their own in order to be to possess the skills that they need in order to move into industry when those kinds of tools aren't available to them, depending on the workplace that they move into. So yeah, lots of different things come up in this conversation around, you know, how do we use AI ethically? How do we prepare students to use it beyond the university?
Yeah, thank you so much for this. I guess one thing that I've heard from both of you, and I think I'm hearing, I feel like, from other instructors, is that there is a bit of an anxiety among students. They're not, some of them do feel negatively about it. Others have kind of taken permission to use it as like a blanket permission to plagiarize. But and then other students are really nervous to even try sanctions assignments because of this kind of still feeling that we all have that it's somehow not your own work. It's somehow cheating. So I'll ask each of you, I guess, to just to wrap things up, is what would you want students who may be listening to this to take away from your perspective as an instructor?
Well, I think it's important to be critical of the tools that we use, to understand that issues of not only hallucinations and bias, and but also thinking about issues around equity and access. And I think that, you know, I think it's really important that we build all of that in when we're using this tool, that students are aware of it. And also transparency. We have to be transparent how we're using ChatGPT or generative AI as instructors. If we're asking our students also to be transparent about their use, and researchers also need to be transparent about how they're using it. And I just think that that's probably key.
I agree. Being critical of these tools, and also Course policies differ from course to course, and I think it's really important that students read their syllabus, that they understand the expectations from a course from an instructor, and that when they have any questions or any doubt, they reach out to the instructor, to their teaching assistant, to be sure that they're covering their bases. I would give students the same advice that I gave students before ChatGPT. When in doubt, cite it. When in doubt, cite it. Utilize the resources that are given to you, or seek out resources, ask questions. Transparency is really important. And I think that we need to really develop a culture of trust as researchers, you're quite right, Leanne, across the academy, in order to sort of ensure that this tool is integrated in ways that are both ethical and effective and useful for us.
Wow, wonderful. I love this. I think I'm going to be left with this thought, cultivating a culture of trust. I think that's a good way of putting kind of where we need to get to with education and in collaborating with our students, rather than sort of being frightfully caught into a cycle of, you know, trying to get ahead of, you know, the next tool and like constraining its use and trying to catch plagiarisms and so on. That does not foster a culture of trust. I think you both have really highlighted for me that we need to collaborate with our students. We need to involve them and bring them into them creating, being part of their own learning and taking learning agency and reflecting on what is it that they will be taking away when using or not using ChatGPT.
This has been an episode of Speakable. Speakable is also broadcast live on CJSF, SFU's campus radio at 90.1 FM. If you are a student interested in getting involved, drop us an email and stay updated on FCAT social media and at www.sfu.ca/FCAT.
Hey, this is Anuki, your Faculty of Environment representative, here to let you know what the SFSS is. The SFSS is a student union that is student-led, and it represents and advocates for the interests of the 26,000 undergraduate students at SFU. We are a non-for-profit support network and a voice at SFU, which provides services like the UPass and health and dental. We also provide support to make your student life better. You can reach the SFSS on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or by emailing us. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Cooperatives and Mutuals Canada is honored to host the annual CMC Congress from June 10 to June 12 at the Hotel Saskatchewan in Regina, Saskatchewan. Under this year's theme, The Future is Co-op, join us for thought-provoking plenaries and participate in interactive workshops and breakout sessions. To learn more or register, please visit www.canada.coop now.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, February 7, 2025. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. What does it mean for a workplace to be truly accommodating for all? How can we advocate for more people-first workplaces? Where are governments and companies failing us, and how can we better protect each other? Labor reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga sits down this week with Brad Evoy, the Executive Director of the Disability Justice Network of Ontario, to discuss all of this and more. Here is that conversation. Take a listen.